This episode is sponsored by Anchor by Spotify. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast, and Ashley and I can definitely personally vouch for this. First of all, it saves you a bunch of time, so we don't really talk about this, but Ashley and I both have full-time jobs, and we don't really live close by each other, so we just get together once a week, every week, and talk about our podcast, and Anchor.fm helps us a lot to get everything out there and ready to go for you all to listen to with not a lot of time needed. So first of all, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many more. There are also creation tools right in Anchor that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or from your computer.
Also, Anchor is free, and even though you don't have to pay any money, it actually allows you to make money from your own podcast even without a minimum number of listeners. It's everything you could possibly need to make a podcast for free in one place.
So if you can't already tell, we both love Anchor. And if you're interested in starting a podcast of your own, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Hi, listeners, and welcome to Above the Wing, a podcast to bring together all aspects of the aviation community, including engineers, journalists, mechanics, pilots, and even casual hobbyists. I'm your co-host, Kim.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley. We'll talk about all things aviation, from current events to new products and airplanes, to industry trends and everything in between. Looking at our first in the news article this week, the company GE recently announced plans to spin off their healthcare and energy businesses as separate companies by early 2024, which will leave them with an aviation-focused company shaping the future of flight. They're expected to spin off their healthcare section by early 2023, but they're going to keep a stake of it as their own. They're also on track to reduce their debt by more than $75 billion by the end of this year, in part due to the company's sale of their GECAS aircraft leasing business. GE Aviation has an installed base of 37,700 commercial engines and 26,500 military engines. In their business and general aviation space, the division currently offers the CF-34, Passport, and HF-120 turbofans, as well as the H-Series turboprop. They're also developing a catalyst turboprop engine that will power the Beechcraft Denali. So, sounds like quite a shift in plans for GE moving forward, and it'll be interesting to see how it affects them as a company.
Yeah, when I saw this headline, it was pretty interesting to me because this follows the lead of Raytheon Technologies, formerly United Technologies Corporation, UTC, prior to their spinoff, had different business units in different places outside of aerospace. So, for example, they had Otis Elevator Company, and then they spun off the aerospace units as their own and then left the other units as their own outstanding units as well. So, interesting how that is how this industry is shaping out to be. So we'll see how this affects the greater industry as a whole, as well as GE as its own company. Now into our next headline, we have a new aircraft alert. Meet the Wright Spirit, an all-electric regional jet. This was made by LA-based startup Wright Electric, spelled like the Wright brothers. They're looking to have a full electric aircraft in the air by 2026. This has 186 seats, and it's called the Wright One, as the number one. It is planning to be launched for carriers on routes that cover up to 700 nautical miles or 1,290 kilometers. It is, quote, powered by a high-efficiency, high-power density inverter and a 2-megawatt or 2,700 horsepower motor. They're looking to concentrate on one-hour-long flights, so some sample routes are London to Paris, San Francisco to LA, and Rio de Janeiro to Sao Paulo. The company's CEO, Jeff Engler, said in a statement that aviation has committed to net zero carbon emissions by 2050, but Wright is committed to a 100% reduction in all emissions starting in 2026. As always, it's encouraging to see these smaller companies chase after net zero carbon emissions so aggressively, and it's really inspiring.
Yeah, it definitely is, and it really fits right in with the name of the program. I really like it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Moving on to some airline-related news, Boeing, amongst other airlines, are saying that they need significant time to resolve the 5G spectrum issue. The aviation industry recently told the White House that it's going to take, quote, significant time to ensure it's safe for major U.S. wireless companies to use C-band spectrum for 5G communications. Earlier this month, AT&T and Verizon agreed to delay by a month the commercial launch of C-band wireless up until early January. The FAA, though, has issued a bulletin alerting manufacturers, operators, and pilots that action might be needed to address potential interference with sensitive aircraft electronics caused by the deployment of 5G technologies. The FAA said operators, quote, should be prepared for the possibility that interference from 5G transmitters and other technology could cause certain safety equipment to malfunction, requiring them to take mitigating action that could affect flight operations. The letter also said that the aerospace industry would work to develop new standards, equipment, and aircraft and helicopter integration solutions, but they are going to require more detailed knowledge of the C-band deployment that's going to take significant time to meet FAA's safety requirements. So it's interesting, you know, sort of to hear this side of things when just in like every day-to-day stuff, you hear like this excitement around 5G, but it's sort of crazy to hear like how it might affect, you know, airlines and other aircraft operations.
Yeah, I agree. I never thought that my phone's data would affect FAA so much.
Right.
All right, our last headline for today is that applications are now open for $1 million in scholarships. This is sponsored by the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association Foundation. It is awarded to high school students, teachers, primary flight training students, pilots seeking advanced ratings and certificates, as well as aspiring aircraft mechanics. Primary training scholarships include sport, recreational, or private pilot certifications. Scholarships will range from $2,500 to $14,000. If you're interested, the deadline to apply is February 11, 2022 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can apply by visiting aopa.org. Now moving on to our topic for today's episode, which is aerial firefighting. This is an area of aerospace that I didn't know that much about until the huge California wildfires. And in all the news, you know, coverage and stuff, you would always see these huge airplanes spraying stuff into the fires, and I never really knew what all that was. So this was an awesome opportunity for us to learn a little bit more on a new application of airplanes. So first and foremost, we'll give you some background and run through all the different types of aircrafts there are in an aerial firefighting fleet. So we'll start off small. There's a single engine air tanker, and it's abbreviated SEAT, or SEAT. These can deliver up to 800 gallons of fire retardant to support firefighters on the ground. They can reload and operate in areas where large air tankers cannot. And the aircraft types included in SEATs are the Air Tractor AT-802. Moving up in size, there's Large Air Tanker, or LAT. You'll probably catch on that these names are not too super creative. They can deliver 2,000 to 4,000 gallons of fire retardant, so a little bit larger than the single engine air tanker. They include military aircraft equipped with modular airborne firefighting systems, or MAFFS. I thought this was pretty cool. So these are basically just portable fire retardant delivery systems, and they can be inserted into military C-130 aircraft without major structural modifications. So it sounds like they kind of just tack it on to these former...
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it kind of gives these old military aircraft like more life and more service, which I thought was interesting. This is a joint effort between the U.S. Forest Service and the Department of Defense. So that was something super cool and new that I learned while doing the research for this. Some of the aircraft types included in the large air tanker category are P-2VH, HC-130H, BAE-146, and C-130Qs. Next, we just covered single engine air tanker, large air tanker. Now we have very large air tanker. abbreviated VLAT, they can deliver 8,000 plus gallons of fire retardant, and aircraft types included in this category are DC-10s.
That's so crazy. DC-10s are huge. Like, it's really just wild to think about them doing this sort of mission.
I know. And C-130s are huge, too.
Right, yeah.
When I first read about the U.S. Forest Service tacking on these modular airborne firefighting systems onto C-130s, I was like, that's already a huge plane, and they're already putting this additional system on it. That's kind of crazy. But you got to have a big plane to carry all this fire retardant, I guess.
I guess so.
So the next category, we're this marks a departure from the large and very large nomenclature. But there's an aircraft called a water scooper, and they skim the surface of bodies of water, scoop water onboard into a tank, and drop it into a fire. I actually watched a video of a water scooper do this, and it's crazy. I never thought a plane would be able to do something like this. It kind of looks like a whale. It like drinks the water and then like dumps it out.
That's awesome.
The aircraft types included in the water scooper category are Bombardier CL-415s and Air Tractor Fire Bosses. Next, we have smoke jumper aircraft. They deliver smoke jumpers by parachute, and I didn't know smoke jumpers existed. This was also super crazy to me. Smoke jumpers are specially trained wildland firefighters. They perform the initial attack on wildfires, but they might also provide leadership for extended attack. So if more team members come later on to help out with the firefighting. After they're dropped off, they're supplied by parachute with food, water, and firefighting tools, and they're self-sufficient for 48 hours. So they jump into these aircraft, and then they jump out, and they just literally fight this fire for two straight days. I think that's insane.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So smoke jumper aircrafts usually carry 8 to 10 smoke jumpers, depending on their initial supply of gear, which also makes sense. I'm sure they have a ton of gear on them to prepare for this journey. The aircraft types included in the smoke jumper aircraft category are De Havilland DH-6-300 series, Twin Otter, Shorts Sherpa C-23A, Dornier 228, and CASA C-A-S-A-A 212. And then we have unmanned aircraft systems, which I think Ashley will touch a little bit upon in her section, but it's basically just drones. and then next is the fleet, I suppose, that doesn't actively firefight, if that makes sense. So aerial supervision modules or lead planes in air attack are kind of like they oversee all the operations. So the lead plane coordinate, direct, and evaluate all air tanker operations. Pilots and or tactical supervisors communicate with firefighters on the ground and other aircraft and air tanker pilots. And they also release white smoke to show air tanker pilots where to drop retardant. And I thought that was a really interesting way, because I'm sure if you were to drop any other color, it would easily be dissolved into the black smoke. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, they came out with a good system. The aircraft types for lead planes are Beechcraft King Air 90 and Beechcraft King Air 200. The second category of kind of the supervisory roles of firefighting aircraft are the air attack aircraft. They coordinate the firefighting aircraft over the wildland fires. They're essentially eyes in the sky for firefighters on the ground, and they ensure safe aviation operations. The airplanes included in the air attack aircraft are Twin Commander 500 and 600. And finally, there's resource management. So this includes other missions that aren't related to firefighting, but they might use some similar aircraft. Other missions include surveying, law enforcement, gathering infrared data, and transporting personnel and cargo. Some of these aircrafts might be Cessna 206s, Aero Commander 500s, King Air 200s, Piper Super Clubs, and Cessna 185s. So that's kind of an overview of all the different things that go into a firefighting operation.
So like Kim mentioned, sometimes unmanned aircraft systems are used. And we saw sort of an interesting use case with NASA joining California firefighters in using drones to help fight wildfires. Thermal imagery can be obtained by drones and determine where fire containment lines should be established. And NASA's team wanted to make aerial firefighting as useful as possible in some of these situations. So back in August and September of this year, they shadowed drone pilots and incident commanders from three different agencies, getting behind-the-scenes information from members of the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, as well as the U.S. Forest Service and the National Park Service. The NASA team was able to see how drones were able to look for traces of fire down, in particular, steep gullies. And the thermal data collected was able to provide, information to decide if firefighters could actually hold down the fire or if they should, you know, advance to a different ridgeline in these gullies, or if it meant that they would just not be able to fight these fires, unfortunately. So it was really interesting to see, like, all these different agencies. Like, you don't really think of NASA when you think of, fighting wildfires, but how they used sort of some interesting technology around UASs and, like, this pretty cool technology to see, fire lines and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. When I first heard of UASs in firefighting, I totally assumed that they would just be like surveying and just giving information. Supplementary information that wasn't critical to deciding whether or not they should even attempt to fight the fire, or even like supplemental fire retardant drops and stuff like that. But I feel like this study, I suppose, kind of shows that there's a really big part that these drones could play in firefighting. And I really like how they came up with like a creative way to utilize UASs for sure.
Yeah, I agree. It is definitely creative. And like I said, it's pretty cool to see some pretty interesting different groups of, you know, companies or agencies or whatever come together around this.
Yeah, and I wonder if all the push for air taxis would be useful for drones and firefighting. I don't know. There might be some crossover.
Yeah, there's definitely, you think of like all the different technologies and stuff that are starting to come out. Once you really start to deep dive into like topics like this, it makes you think like how many uses this stuff could actually have.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Looking ahead to the upcoming bushfire season, Australia is putting finishing touches on their lineup of aerial firefighting aircraft. The National Aerial Firefighting Center expects to have contracts in place for 5 large privately owned large air tankers, which is one more than last year, in addition to the 737 owned by the government of New South Wales. They are going to have 11 large Type 1 helicopters on contract this year, which is 2 more than the previous bushfire season. So it's sort of interesting to hear they're using helicopters over in Australia. In addition to these large air tankers and Type 1 helicopters, other aircraft, more than 150, will be on exclusive use or call when needed contracts. And about 110 will be mostly used for firebombing, others for air attack, winching, repelling, reconnaissance, and special intelligence gathering. So it's sort of interesting to see some of the behind the scenes, like planning around what goes into, a pre-bushfire season.
Mm-hmm. And that reminds me of an article that I found. In 2013, the U.S. Government Accountability Office reviewed efforts to determine an adequate firefighting aircraft fleet and found that there was insufficient information on performance and effectiveness of firefighting aircraft. So when you said that Australia decided on this combination of aircraft, it reminded me of this study. The goal of this report was to, quote, systematically document the operational utilization and technical contribution of aerial firefighting resources that have the ability to deliver water and wildland fire chemicals in support of incident objectives. A lot of big words that I don't think were necessary. But basically, they're trying to have something written down that gives them criteria on which aircraft and which combination of aircrafts are most effective in fighting wildland fires. So the key findings are that 1 helicopter or 1 scooper, 2 seats, 3 lats and V-lats are most effective. They found that seats, lats, and V-lats are mostly used for halting fire spread than reducing fire intensity. And compared to helicopters, seats, lats, V-lats, and scoopers had higher rates of unknown outcomes associated with no confirmation of the effect of the drop on achieving the objective. I thought that was super interesting. I totally thought that helicopters would have higher rates of unknown outcomes just because in my head, like, I don't know, helicopters are a lot smaller and also it has a spinning mm-hmm. propeller. So I feel like might stir the fire. I don't know. That was just my line of thinking. But yeah. That was an interesting finding for sure.
Yeah, that definitely is pretty interesting. Especially the like halting fire spread versus reducing fire intensity. Mm-hmm. I guess it sort of makes sense. It's almost like, I don't want to say like a band-aid, but like at least stopping it from moving could be beneficial as opposed to like stopping it entirely, you know?
Yeah. And that brings me back to the drone article with NASA that mm-hmm. you were talking about, because I wonder if those drones could in the future like help decide what kind of fleet they need, right? Like if the fire is like way too large to contain, then maybe they'll need more of one aircraft than the other. Or maybe it's like you have to reduce the fire intensity so you won't call in seats, lats, and V-lats. You'll call in a different kind of aircraft or something like that. So maybe in the future they could come up with some sort of like logic tree to figure out exactly what needs to be done to more effectively fight the fire.
Yeah, definitely. Another sort of interesting fact that I found was that looking back at this past fire season, a New Mexico-based company dropped a record-setting 12 million gallons of retardant this past fire season. One of our nation's, America's, resources is New Mexico-based aerial firefighting organization called 10 Tanker Air Carrier. And they operate a fleet of McDonnell Douglas DC-10s. The company is contracted by the U.S. Forest Service and other state entities, like I mentioned before, the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Now, their planes are modified with 3 gravity feed tank systems, and they can carry up to over 9,000 gallons of water or fire retardant, known as post-check. They are programmed to do a sequence drop or a split drop, meaning they can dump all the retardant at once or in intervals.
What is crazy to me is like 9,400 gallons is so much liquid.
Yeah.
Like these planes are huge.
Yeah, right. Like think about how heavy that is.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Like you're not moving fast at all.
No, you're not. And you need massive engines to get it to move even just a little bit. That's crazy to me.
Oh, yeah. Seriously. Those amounts of retardant, they're dropped at 200 to 300 feet above the ground. And, yeah, just like we were saying, at only 140 knots. They're typically at the fire for only 10 to 15 minutes, and then they return to base just to fill up again. And reloading only takes 15 minutes. Like, all that liquid. 15 minutes.
I'm imagining going to the gas station and, like, filling up my car and standing outside for 15 minutes. It's just ridiculous. It's such a different scale, I feel like.
The CEO of 10 Tanker says that the DC-10 is a favorable aircraft to use in missions like this because the tanks on the bottom of the plane
actually allow them to carry three times as much as any other carrier that is out there being used. Those tanks are also capable of dropping thick, consistent lines of fire retardant anywhere from a quarter mile to 1 mile away, depending on, you know, where exactly the coverage area is. But that's pretty crazy that they can be like up to that far away and still consistently, you know, fight these fires. The planes also are capable of flying downhill, which is just a lot for my brain to try and imagine.
I agree.
these large CC-10s, like, doing that.
Zooming down a hill.
Yeah. And they can drop it at sort of an angle where it hits, like, sides of mountains, which is pretty crazy. These aircraft are typically manned by two pilots and one flight engineer monitoring the systems and making inputs for the drops, and as well as sometimes up to two mechanics for repositioning flights.
I think this is crazy to me. Like you said, a DC-10 flying downhill is so crazy for my mind to imagine. Another thing that I was curious about is, like, do they have to plan out the flight routes for these guys? Like, do they look at the fire area and they're like, okay, you have to, like, fly here, like, to this corner and then to this corner or something like that?
Yeah, because they must.
Yeah. Because if it takes 15 minutes to refuel, then they must make the most out of their missions, right?
Right. I'm sure they do. I wonder, like, how, though, they, like, get a good sense of, like, what's going on. Well, maybe that's what, like, the King Airs and stuff are for.
Yeah.
Supervision. Yeah, right.
So it's all just a huge operation of a ton of aircrafts acting as a team.
I guess so.
Another super small detail that I'm thinking about is, like, to cover the most amount of area, they must make a lot of turns. And a D-10 carrying more than 9,000 gallons of water must not be able to make very tight turns. So I wonder if have someone like a computer scientist or something running algorithms to see like the angle of each turn or something like that. I don't know.
Like this flight engineer that's on like the DC-10, like maybe he's like planning that stuff through. I don't know.
Yeah. I know for UPS, they have like computer science people like figure out which routes are more efficient. So I wonder if they do something similar for this.
So now we're going to transition into our featured photo segment. And you can see the photos that we're going to talk through on our Instagram at abovethewing.podcast. Kim, do you want to talk us through your first photo?
Yeah, definitely. So in this holiday spirit, this is an ornament that features the Globe Swift. The Globe Swift is a two-seat retractable gear aircraft from the post-World War II era. It was designed in 1940, received type certification in 1946, and production stopped in 1951. And this is the annual sporty ornament. And I think it's just very cute. Sporty, if you're listening, I would love a free ornament. You can send me one.
They did a great job this year. It looks fun. And
I agree.
Fun aircraft to pick.
And I love the little sparkles around the aircraft. It's very cute.
I know. It really is the details that get you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Looking to my a lot less fun photo, federal agents recently rescued a man standing on top of a sinking airplane off the coast of Northwest Florida. According to a news release from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, agents and local deputies spotted the plane while they were out on a separate joint operation. Authorities say the plane was half a mile from the Georgia T. Lewis Airport. As they approached the sinking aircraft, a man climbed out, and this photo shows him standing on top of the small plane as rescuers arrived. So definitely a scary moment. I read that, you know, he walked away really without a scratch, but it's just pretty scary.
I agree. I remember I saw this news article and I was in shock that this man was so composed.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, his outfit looks great. He's not wet at all, and he's standing in the middle of the ocean. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's crazy.
Yeah, good for him.
I know. Very happy for him.
Quite the story to tell.
Definitely. All right, well, that just about wraps it up for this week. Thank you so much for tuning into our episode, and you can find more Above the Wing content at abovethewing.podcast on Instagram, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening.